mildly battered and unkempt, but not lethally so.
"Irene!"
Kai exclaimed, rushing into the room.
"Are you all right?"
"No, I'm currently suffering from a curare poisoning," she attempted to communicate. A gurgle came out of her mouth. Kai's eyes went to the scratch on her neck.
"Heaven and earth!" he exclaimed. "She's poisoned! Silver must have got here before us. I'm going to kill him!"
"Excuse me," Vale said, and picked up Irene's hand where it lay limply on the arm of the chair.
He slid back her cuff and checked her pulse.
"The lady is conscious, as you can see, and seems in good health otherwise, so one must assume a paralytic."
"Irene, say something."
Kai leaned forward and cupped her face in his hands, staring into her eyes. She could just barely feel the touch of his skin against her face.
"Can you hear us?"
"Hear,"
she managed to force out.
Curare.
"She's been poisoned with curare."
Kai swung round to Vale.
"Quick, where can we find a doctor?"
Irene wondered, sourly, if dragons were particularly prone to stating the obvious at moments of crisis, or if it was just him.
"Aha."
Vale brightened, his eyes flashing with enthusiasm.
"I believe we can deal with this here and now. I have a small amount of strychnine derivative with me, which I use as a stimulant in moments of emergency."
"Much is now explained," Irene thought, even more sourly.
"And while there may be some minor side effects, with any luck, it should restore her enough to speak. Mr. Strongrock, if you would be good enough to hold her shoulders steady."
"Of course,"
Kai said, stepping round behind her chair to grasp her shoulders. She could actually feel his fingers biting into her through the folds of clothing. Either the curare was wearing off, or that was a very firm grasp indeed. Vale removed a small glass tube from an inner pocket of his coat. Leaning forward and turning his head away, he flipped the lid off and briefly passed it under Irene's nose. Irene inhaled. Her whole body jolted in an undignified convulsion, legs kicking wildly and tangling in her long skirt, the muscles in her arms clenching and contracting. Her head snapped back, and without Kai's grip on her shoulders, she would have sprawled out of the chair to thrash on the floor.
"Miss Winter," Vale said, closing the glass tube and putting it back in his pocket. "Can you understand me?"
Irene coughed and focused on breathing for a moment, as the twitching in her limbs slowly eased. It just felt like cramps now. Really bad cramps. The sort of cramps that would ideally warrant a long, extremely slow rubdown in a hot bathhouse. That must be the strychnine. She wouldn't normally let her mind wander like that.
Okay, she managed to mumble. Thank you. Got to. It was Bradamant. The books with Aubrey. Not really Aubrey."
Vale exchanged a meaningful glance with Kai. She could guess what they were thinking. She's still delirious. She had to make herself understood. Irene closed her eyes for a moment, focused, thought vicious curses down upon Bradamant's head, and opened her eyes again.
"Three things,"
she said distinctly.
"First, the book was posted to Dominic Aubrey. I believe Wyndham must have wanted him to keep it safe from Silver. Second, Bradamant poisoned me. She wants to get the book first. Third, I think Alberic killed Dominic Aubrey before we arrived. Think he was posing as him when we arrived. The only reason he doesn't have the book yet is because he hasn't checked Aubrey's post."
Her leg spasmed. She leaned over awkwardly and banged it with her fist.
"Ow!"
she said. Vale and Kai exchanged glances again. She had the feeling that more was being communicated than she could see. Perhaps it was a manly thing. Perhaps it was a dragon thing on one side and a great detective thing on the other.
"Could Bradamant be working with Alberic?" Kai asked. "If she poisoned you?"
Irene shook her head and regretted it. She put her hands on the arms of her chair and struggled to push herself up to a standing position, glaring at Kai when he tried to help her.
"Bradamant has no clue," she snapped. "Bradamant is an idiot." Bradmant ran off to get the book. I didn't get to tell her about Alberic and Dominic. I'm not sure she even believed me that Alberic is here, and if he's still around the British Library when she arrives.
The thought made her throat go dry. She wanted to take some sort of painful and pointed revenge on Bradamant, but she didn't hate her that much.
We have to get there first, she said firmly.
She took a step and almost fell over. Vale caught her elbow and supported her.
Miss Winters, you are in no condition to accompany us. You should rest here while Mr. Strongrock and I go in search of your errant comrade. While I would normally agree with you, Kai said, there are those werewolves.
You didn't even deal with the werewolves,
Irene snapped. She was aware that she was being just a little unfair here, but at least presumed allies hadn't stabbed them in the back while they were trying to do their job. Or their neck. Whatever.
True, Vale said. The werewolves may be a problem. We only inconvenienced them, rather than finishing them off. I have sent for the police, but they will need to reach here first. Perhaps if we...
Perhaps if you what?
A snarling voice inquired. A ragged figure stood in the open doorway, hair sprouting from his clothes at neck and cuffs, with snarling teeth gaping in his mouth.
This time, it's too late for Mr. Bleeding Vale.
Kai snatched up the inkwell from the desk and threw it straight at the werewolf's face. Ink splattered everywhere, on the varnished floor and the papered walls, but mostly on the werewolf. He had time for a single black, drooling look of surprise before Kai's kick caught him in the chest and sent him stumbling back into the central hall. Kai followed it up with an elbow blow to the werewolf's chin, another kick to the back of his knee, and a two-handed smash to the back of his neck. The werewolf lay flat in a splatter of drool and ink. Vale half-supported, half-dragged Irene out of the office and into the main hall.
"It seems you will have to come with us after all, Miss Winters," he said.
"Quick!"
Kai exclaimed, ignoring the general mob of bystanders, either shrieking or staring.
"We need to catch a cab."
"A cab? My dear fellow, a cab would be far too slow," Vale said. "We need to get to the roof."
"The roof," Irene said. She was possibly being a bit slow here, but she wasn't sure that Kai turning into a dragon and flying them there would be much use. Unless...
"Oh, of course, the airships."
"Precisely," Vale said, hurrying her to the stairs. "Of course, there may be some problems with mooring subsequently, but it's our best option."
Kai caught up with them and grabbed Irene's other elbow to assist in the dragging her along like a giant doll process.
"I hear more of them coming. Which way, Vale?"
"Left at the top,"
Vale instructed. They dashed past two astonished tour groups and turned left, entering a wide gallery full of large glass cases. Here, stuffed hyenas menaced stuffed deer, a giant stuffed polar bear towered over some bored-looking stuffed seals, and a rainbow of stuffed birds sat mournfully among dried flowers.
"Catch them!"
she heard Silver's voice calling from behind them. An utterly blood-chilling howling rose up ahead of them. Panicked visitors fled the room, forcing Irene and the two men to one side as they stampeded out of the far doors.
"Get me a megaphone," Irene said quietly to Kai. Her legs were still cramping, and she had to hold on to Vale to stay upright.
But she had an idea, and this time, just this time, she had the feeling it was going to work.
"The tour guides have them."
Kai grabbed a tour guide as he rushed past and swiftly relieved him of his megaphone.
"Will this do?"
The first werewolf came howling into sight, rounding one of the glass cases. Its head and hands were totally wolf-like now, and its clothing was splitting down the seams as it changed shape. Irene tried the megaphone.
"Is this thing on?"
Feedback fuzz echoed in the room. The werewolf seemed to laugh. Another one joined it. They were approaching slowly. Clearly, they were just as interested in fear as they were in bloodshed.
"Miss Winters," Vale began, "if you have anything in mind."
Irene held up her hand in apology. Very precisely, she directed the language through the megaphone.
"Stuffed creatures come to life and attack werewolves."
The words shook in the air and drew energy from her to make themselves real in the world. It was simple enough to tell a lock to open or a door to shut. These actions came naturally to those objects, and the universe was glad to oblige. But stuffed animals weren't in the habit of reanimating to attack things. Except now, as Vale looked at her in growing comprehension, and Kai smiled a sharp-edged smile, it was coming true. The polar bear burst from its case with a silent roar, mouth open to display all those carefully preserved teeth. The glass panes crashed in a waterfall of shards onto the tiled floor, shattering in all directions. The seals came crawling after it, flopping in spasmodic jerks across the floor. Elsewhere in the room, more glass cracked as a flood of creatures fought their way out. A wolf pack staggered forward on stiff legs, and a carefully wired boa constrictor came writhing out of its own case, uncaring of the glass daggers stuck into its sawdust-stuffed body. And even the birds threw themselves at the walls of their cases, struggling on the ends of their wires.
"Dear heavens," Vale said. "Miss Winters, what have you done?"
"They'll only attack the werewolves," Irene said, tossing the megaphone to one side. It crunched and tinkled as it hit the floor. "We need to run while they're distracted, before Silver gets here." Vale had a good instinct for knowing when to act now and ask questions later. It must be part of being a great detective, Irene decided giddily, wondering if the strychnine curare cocktail was making her delirious. One of the werewolves tried to break away from the attacking mob of otters and crocodiles to get at them, but a persistent baby alligator, observe the young of the species, only 2 feet long, chomped on its ankle and dragged it back into the melee. Vale navigated confidently through more stairs and corridors, and then they were on the roof. The air outside was smoggy and cold. It hit Irene's throat and made her cough. 2 small airships bobbed on the end of moorings in a darkly ominous sky, hovering perhaps 20 feet above the roof of the museum. A guard came hurrying towards them.
"Mr. Vale," he said, moustache quivering. "Now, excuse me, sir, I'm sure that you have very urgent business up here, but this is off-limits." "There is no time for that, man," Vale declared. "Barricade the doors. There are werewolves at large in the museum. Inspector Singh is bringing a force from Scotland Yard to sweep the place. In the meantime, I require one of your zeppelins to stop the perpetrator before he can escape."
The guard's eyes widened. He stroked his moustache nervously.
"Is it that urgent, sir?" "It's a matter of life and death," Vale snapped. "Inspector Singh will explain everything when he gets here. Are you with me, man?" "Yes, sir," the guard declared, nearly snapping his heels together in his enthusiasm.
Werewolves and assisting great detectives must be somewhat unusual. He turned to look up at the floating airships, waving an arm.
"Jenkins, throw down a ladder, girl. You've got a run to do."
With a certain amount of pushing from below and pulling from above, Irene was assisted up the swaying rope ladder. She decided to be grateful that, firstly, she hadn't just been left behind, and secondly, that she was wearing traditional underpants rather than anything scantier. The rest of her mind was preoccupied with clutching the rope ladder with sweating hands, trying not to fall off and die. The pilot was a woman in canvas and leather clothing, the first that Irene had seen in trousers so far in this alternate. Her goggles were shoved back over a coiled heavy braid of hair, and she looked more suspicious than the guard had been.
"I don't know what's going on," she said, "but I'll have to see some authorization."
"My name is Vale," Vale announced. "I require your assistance to reach the British Library as fast as possible."
"That and a shilling will buy you a pound of onions," the woman said.
Unimpressed, she leaned back in her seat, a hammock-like sling of leather straps and creaking rubber.
"Go find some other poor sod to risk their job if you want to chase criminals."
Irene considered the possible mental damage of what she was about to do. Librarians were generally supposed to avoid it because of the risks of imposing on people's minds, not to mention the universe occasionally backlashing in interesting ways. But they were running out of time.
"Miss Jenkins." "That's Mrs. Jenkins to you," the woman snapped. "I'm a respectable married woman, I am."
"Mrs. Jenkins," Irene continued, switching fluidly into the language. You perceive that the detective here is showing you reliable and acceptable authorization. Mrs. Jenkins frowned, staring at Vale.
Well, I can't say as I like it, she finally said. But that seems to be all in order. British Library, you said?
At once, Vale said, with only a quick frown at Irene. There is no time to lose.
Very good, sir, the woman said. Kindly have you and your friends hang on to the straps further back in the cabin. This is going to be a bumpy ride. The wind's against us.
Irene heard shouting in the background and looked down. Silver was standing on the roof, his cape billowing behind him as he pointed at the Zeppelin. Kai saw him too and took rapid action, casting off the mooring cable. The whole Zeppelin rocked, and Irene had to grab for the straps, but they were moving, jerking away from the museum at the sudden loss of their tether.
Damn dilettante amateurs, Mrs. Jenkins muttered, and ran her hands over the controls, flipping two switches and spinning a dial before hauling on a joystick.
The Zeppelin tilted and jolted into forward motion.
Passengers, we are now in the open air and heading for the British Library. Please talk among yourselves while I pilot this damn thing, because I don't like being distracted.
Yes, Vale said, turning to Irene. We need to talk, Miss Winters.
Chapter 19. Irene could think of so many things that Vale might want to discuss that it wasn't even funny. But she was going to sit down first. She decided, as she perched on a ledge which might be a seat, that this sort of transport must be reserved for very small antiques. The compartment was cramped, with hardly enough room for the three of them, let alone the storage of large items. The engine was also incredibly noisy, which was good. Irene didn't really want Mrs. Jenkins listening in on this. Vale himself remained standing, holding on to an overhead strap, using the advantage of his height to tower over Irene. Possibly in response, Kai also stayed on his feet, moving over to loom behind Irene's shoulder supportively. Irene wished that they'd both been poisoned too. Perhaps then there'd be a bit more understanding about wanting to sit down.
Miss Winters, Vale said, retreating into formality. Am I to understand that you have the fae-like power to glamour and delude the minds of others?
Oh, so that was what had disturbed him.
No, she said, then qualified it with. Not precisely. And you're probably wondering why I didn't do such a thing before.
Or why you suddenly revealed it now, after using it on me without my realizing it,
Vale suggested, brows drawn together suspiciously.
Damn. It was a logical suspicion which she'd been hoping that he wouldn't have. Why did he have to use those qualities that she admired against her? I'm hardly that stupid, she said.
But you might have been that desperate, Vale answered. An explanation, if you please.
Irene sighed. She'd been hoping to avoid this.
All right. You know that I can use the language to, in blunt terms, make things do things. I can't change a door from a locked door to an open door, but I can make the lock on a door open itself. There are some subtleties to this, but I hope you'll understand that I can't explain everything in full detail and with footnotes. I can get away with telling my superiors that I explained some things to you, but there are limits.
You show a sudden high regard for your superior's opinion, Vale commented.
She was suddenly furious, his words reviving Bradamant's torts on not involving others and doing the job, no matter what.
I'm not supposed to be sharing anything with you at all.
She could feel her control slipping, which just made it worse. She should be handling this dispassionately, like a capable librarian, as Bradamant would have done. She shouldn't feel this sudden lurch at the thought of ruining any sort of friendship with Vale. She was not supposed to be involved with him at all. With anyone. Standard procedure is getting in and out, leaving no traces. Standard procedure does not involve investigating local murders, going to local receptions, getting involved with local secret societies.
Or visiting local detectives, Kai put in.
Or forming friendships, Irene heard behind his words. She wished that she had a spare hatpin to jab into Vale, or possibly Kai, who wasn't helping. Standard procedure tends to advise against high-speed chases in borrowed Zeppelins, too, she said flatly. Bradamant would have told you all this. Perhaps she's the one you should have been working with from the beginning. Yes, Bradamant would never have got so involved. I still don't understand why your, foretelling urges pointed you at us rather than her. If you'd been working together, you'd probably have managed to track things down a great deal faster.
Vale simply stared down at her. None of this explains your ability to control the minds of others.
Well, Irene tried to think how to explain it. When I use the language to tell something to do something which is against its nature, the universe resists. This is why those stuffed animals are going to return to that state, probably quite soon. I hope Inspector Singh is there to sort that one out. It's easy to tell a lock to unlock. These things are in a lock's nature. It's much harder to order something to behave in an unnatural manner.
Such as having stuffed animals come to life, Vale agreed.
Well, that's only mostly unnatural, Irene said. After all, they were once living animals. I couldn't require a building to jump up and fall on someone, but I could tell a roof tile to come loose. Do you understand me so far?
I can see your logic, Vale said, clearly interested, but also clearly lacking patience. But again, how is this relevant to controlling minds?
I can tell someone that they're perceiving something other than what they're actually seeing, Irene said, wishing that English was better adapted for this sort of discussion. The problem is that the universe resists, as with objects asked to do unnatural things. Specifically, the person's mind resists, and continually resists until... She paused. Well, some individuals manage better than others, but generally the results aren't pretty. That's what I was told in classes, but that's not the same as what I just did, and it won't last like a glamour does either. She was fairly sure that Mrs. Jenkins couldn't hear this. She certainly hoped so. At the moment, Mrs. Jenkins's mind is telling her that no, she did not see full authorization. When that overcomes my temporary adjustment, probably within the hour, then she will remember everything. But would you rather I just let Silver catch us?
Vale gave Irene a cold look and glanced out of the window at London beneath them, not deigning to answer. Irene propped her elbows on her knees.
If the library told us not to meddle with minds because it was unethical, that might be virtuous. But the fact is, it's very unreliable. And once the subject regains their memory, it can make a mission so much more dangerous.
Irene tried not to dwell on her own lack of ethics. Surely she was more than just a book thief.
Or was the only real difference between her and Bradamant that Bradamant looked good in black leather?
It was easier to think of herself as a valiant preserver of books when there wasn't someone looking her in the eyes and questioning that.
All I've done is applied a very temporary patch, she looked up at Vale. Because I couldn't see any other alternative, and we were in a desperate hurry, as you saw.
Were we?
Vale turned away.
Irene raised her eyebrows, even if he wasn't looking at her.
I realize that you don't see Alberic as a personal threat, she said, or even as a threat to public law and order.
I admit the fellow did try to kill me, Vale said generously.
He will continue to be a threat to you all, as long as the book is here, Irene went on. She felt Kai squeeze her shoulder encouragingly. Once it's gone, he and Silver won't be competing for it any longer.
Silver is hardly your concern, Miss Winters, Vale said. And I fail to understand your distress over one world, when you doubtless have so many to occupy your time. Why should you care about us, except as a source of books?
Irene swallowed and felt her cheeks flush with mingled anger and embarrassment. There was an uncomfortable grain of truth to what he was saying. This was just one alternate world, and one book. So far, I have been assaulted, attacked by cyborg alligators, almost drowned in the Thames, had most of the skin stripped off my hand, poisoned with curare,
revived with strychnine and chased by both werewolves and giant robots. Are you accusing me of not taking this seriously, sir?
On the contrary, madam, I consider that you are taking this extremely seriously. Such devotion is worthy of a good cause. But consider this.
Vale leaned back, bracing his shoulders against the cabin walls.
I see a woman and her assistant who are prepared to go to extremes to secure a single book. I have watched you hijack a Zeppelin in order to achieve your aims. I ask myself, Miss Winters, just how far are you prepared to go?
Wonderful. First Bradamant sneered at her for not going far enough, and now Vale was eyeing her as though she were a prized specimen of the criminal underworld.
I just want to do my job, she said. I have a duty to the library.
Has the library laws?
Vale cut in.
Has it signed treaties with all the worlds, allowing it to steal books? Has it any authority save that which it claims for itself? I would like to know if there is any reason in the world why I should respect it, or its servants.
Irene set her jaw mulishly.
Have I personally broken any laws?
Not yet, Vale said. At least, none of which I am aware.
The tone of his voice made it clear that he suspected she wouldn't hesitate. And would she? Well, it would depend on the law. Her body was humming like a high-tension wire. Probably the effects of the mingled drugs.
I don't want to harm your world, she said quietly, bowing her head. I just want a single book.
She could feel the weight of Vale's accusing stare.
And so we have to hurry across London, deceiving the pilot and endangering her as well as ourselves, because you must have this book. Watch what you say,
Kai said softly. Vale shrugged.
I ask Miss Winters questions, to which she should have answers, if such answers exist. If she has none, then perhaps you should consider your own allegiances. What is the point of this library if it demands such sacrifices?
Irene pushed herself to her feet. Thank you, Kai, but you don't need to defend me. In answer to your questions, Mr. Vale, I'm going to get this book. Not just because the library wants it, but also because Alberic wants it, and he is far more dangerous than you seem to think I am. She gave him a withering look. Has it occurred to you that besides trying to kill us, he has killed other people? Librarians, people that I know about, even if you don't. And we have no idea what he may have done in this world. That if I don't get this book out of here, he will probably kill others. And if I don't get to the British Library first, then...
Her brain caught up with what she was saying.
Then he is going to kill Bradamant, she finished.
Vale snorted.
The woman is clearly capable of taking care of herself.
Maybe she is, Irene said. But that's not the point. I am not going to let her just walk in there and...
She thought of Dominic Aubrey and wondered with a shudder how his skin had ended up in that jar. She would not, could not let that happen to someone else she knew when there was a chance of stopping it.
You may think of me as you wish. I intend to save Bradamant. I refuse to feel guilty for what I've just done.
Ah.
Vale stepped away from the side of the Zeppelin and offered her his hand.
Then I believe we can work together, Miss Winters.
Irene nearly said, huh? Which would have been inappropriate in so many ways. She just stood there limply.
But you were saying...
Vale said.
Really, madam, I can accept that you are an effective agent, much like your colleague Bradamant. I wanted to be sure that there was more to you than that. If the library employs persons like yourself, then I suppose there must be something to be said for it, after all.
Excuse me, Kai began.
You were doing your duty in following orders, and no man could ask for more, Vale said. But Miss Winters is your commanding officer. The truth needed to come from her.
Having won the point, Irene felt a curious mix of emotions, including rage. How dare he consider her ethics from such a lofty height? How dare he judge her? She took a deep breath, forcing down the anger with whatever justification she could bring to mind. He had to make his own decisions. He needed to understand her to do so. Still, it stung. She reached out and clasped his hand briefly.
Thank you, she said. I appreciate that.
Kai stepped up and laid his hand across their joined hands.
Together, we shall put our brick down and rescue Bradamant. Though, personally, as she'd so disloyally betrayed,
he caught Irene's glare.
Still, I am under your orders, he said heroically.
Irene disengaged her hand as tactfully as was possible. Heroic fiction had plenty of manly hand clasps in it, and she'd read enough of them. But it had never gone into how you retrieved your hand afterwards, and whether there were any relevant squeezes or other manoeuvres.
I've been trying to think how to deal with Alberich, she said,
though didn't add, in my copious spare time, as she was tempted to.
And I'd be interested to know if you have anything to suggest.
Shoot the bounder,
Vale suggested.
That works on vampires or werewolves, and even on Fae under some circumstances.
Kai flexed his long-fingered hands. He seemed, for once, to be hesitating.
Kai?
Irene prompted.
There are certain ways that we... That is, my family,
which was probably the closest he was going to come to saying the D word for the moment,
can reinforce an area against chaos. Alberich uses chaos, so he must be contaminated by it. So it should work against him, too.
How large an area? Vale said.
And can you make it permanent?
Clearly he had grand visions of driving the Fae out of his entire world, or at least the British Empire part of it. Kai shook his head.
If we could, then we wouldn't have this ongoing problem. We could just push them out and keep them out. The best I can do is mark out an area and ward it. And it has to be an area that I can travel around in a set period of time.
He brightened up.
Greater powers like my father or my uncle's could guard an entire ocean within a single turning of the sun.
Irene bit the inside of her cheek hard before she could make any comments about putting a girdle round the world in 40 minutes. It probably wasn't an appropriate moment for Shakespeare, and she didn't think Kai would find the analogy funny.
And yourself? She asked.
Kai's shoulders slumped, showing a hint of sulking adolescent.
I'm more bound by physical constraints, he mumbled. And I can't actually force one of those creatures out if it's already inside my wards. I can only set up a boundary so that it can't get in or out. Yes, but how large an area?
Vale pressed.
The whole of London?
Maybe, Kai said.
If you gave me all night. And I'd have to... It would attract attention.
From whom? Irene asked. The Fae?
My relatives, Kai said.
He looked as if he'd like to shrink into a corner at the thought. He seemed to be displaying the heroic nobility of a teenager doing the right thing, combined with the hangdog despair of anticipating the removal of privileges for the next decade. She wondered how old, or how young, he was in terms of dragon aging. He was so mature in some ways, and so young in others. Irene frowned.
Well, I can ward an area against chaos by attuning it to the library. That might force Alberich out of an area if he's already in it, but I can only cover a relatively small area that way. And there are issues of power.
Yes, that was one way of putting it. Warding Vale's rooms the previous night had been fairly simple. Trying to block a larger area of reality, as it were, would take much more of her energy. She would also need a very thorough description of the area that she was trying to ward, but there had to be some way that she could use this. The zeppelin rocked, throwing Irene off her feet. Something whirred and chittered like locusts in the air outside. Kai grabbed her round the waist, catching hold of a hanging strap with his free hand. Vale managed to balance himself against the far wall.
"What's going on?"
he shouted in Mrs. Jenkins's direction.
"We're under attack!"
Mrs. Jenkins snapped back. She didn't look away from the controls. Her right hand was locked into the middle of a brass and pewter orrery, and her left hand was pulling at a range of levers. She tugged at something that looked like an organ stop and frowned when it wouldn't respond.
"Trouble to starboard!"
Irene and the others crowded to the window.
"I can't see anything," Irene said.
The only things in sight were rooftops and smog.
"There!"
Vale declared, pointing a finger.
See that vapor trail?
Something small, Kai said, leaning over Irene's shoulder.
But I can't sense any Fey interference.
You forget the Iron Brotherhood, Vale interrupted. They have their agents after us too.
Hang on,
Mrs. Jenkins called from the cockpit. The Zeppelin lurched again, dragging sideways in a painful, ungainly movement that shook the cabin like a dice cup. Irene and the two men clung to handholds. Lengths of rope that hadn't been strapped to the walls swung out and flailed in the air, and an unsecured teacup bounced from wall to wall, leaving a trail of cold tea droplets.
There he is, Vale exclaimed.
A man had flown into view. He was strapped into some sort of mobile helicopter unit that whirred its tarnished blades dangerously close to his head, and was wearing an oil-smeared leather helmet and overalls. In one hand, he held a heavy pistol with a cable running from it to something strapped to his lower back. He bobbed in the air, steadying the pistol with his free hand as he tried to line up a shot.
"Is there some way we can shoot back?" Kai asked, reverting to smooth competence. "Over here."
Vale leapt into the cockpit and wrenched at a panel above Mrs. Jenkins's head. She ignored him, concentrating on steering the Zeppelin.
"The weapons are kept here on museum vehicles. Ah, here they are."
He pulled out a brace of pistols, tossing one to Kai and another to Irene, who wasn't too confident about popping off shots at a flying target.
"Isn't there anything larger on board?" she asked. "A flare pistol or something?"
Vale spared his attention from smashing a window to give her a sharp look.
"Really, Miss Winters, a flare pistol on a Zeppelin? I thought you were more sensible than that."
"It's not something I've ever studied," Irene muttered, and decided to keep any other bright ideas to herself for the moment.
Kai and Vale were both shooting out of the window, and could certainly do so without her assistance. She staggered forward to the cockpit.
"How much further to the library, Mrs. Jenkins?"
"Almost at it," Mrs. Jenkins said bluntly. "But it's not going to be a rat's arse of use, because we can't land with that maniac out there firing at us. I don't know what sort of stories you've heard about what Zeppelins can and can't do, miss, but I need to hover while someone throws us a line and makes us secure. And that's what we call, in aviator parlance, a sitting target. So I hope your friend's a good shot, or I'm going to be making altitude and heading north until we lose him. Can't risk crashing with the streets this busy."
Vale shouldered over to grab Irene's arm. Apparently their shots had all gone wide.
"Miss Winters, can your abilities be of use here?"
Irene shook her head.
"I can't affect him or his gear. They can't hear me."
Vale stared at her.
"Hear you?"
"The language only works on the universe if the universe can hear it," Irene snapped.
She was sure that she'd explained this to him earlier. Perhaps she hadn't.
"I can affect this Zeppelin, but I don't see what good that would be."
Vale suddenly snapped his fingers.
"I do. Mrs. Jenkins, bring us in to above the British Library right now, if you please, and be ready for an abrupt descent." "What are we trying?" Kai asked, looking round from the window.
"I wouldn't mind knowing that myself,"
Mrs. Jenkins said. The Zeppelin wheeled to the left, throwing them all off balance again.
"We're 300 yards off, coming in at 45 miles an hour, and the landing roof's only 50 yards long."
"On my word, Miss Winters," Vale instructed. "Tell all the structural components of the Zeppelin to increase their weight by 50%. Mrs. Jenkins, you are to deploy landing flaps."
He checked his watch. Another burst of chittering sounded outside.
"Damn,"
Mrs. Jenkins commented.
"I hate those things."
"Which things?" Irene asked, frantically trying to remember vocabulary for Zeppelin parts.
"Seed ammunition,"
Mrs. Jenkins said, adjusting the organ stop controls.
"They chew right through an airbag. Stand by for rapid braking."
"Now,"
Vale declared.
"All Zeppelin structure parts, increase your weight by a half again,"
Irene shouted, projecting her voice to ensure it would carry through both cabin and cockpit. She didn't want half the struts deciding to stay their original weight, making the whole thing break up in midair. Imagination could supply too many images, and none of them good.
Mrs. Jenkins slammed down half a dozen of the organ stops simultaneously, using her left hand and forearm, and threw herself back in her seat. The Zeppelin shuddered, leather straining and metal creaking, and the whirring motors outside howled in near-human agony. Kai had dropped his gun and was hanging onto the straps with one hand and Irene with the other, and Irene couldn't complain. Vale had tucked his elbow through a strap and was watching the view through the shattered window with keen curiosity. They were sinking in the air, dragged down as if someone was hauling the craft's mooring rope from below, but they were still moving forward. The braking flaps were working, but, Irene thought, maybe not fast enough.
"Should I make it heavier?"
she shouted at Vale, her voice barely carrying above the howling of the air and the tortured noise of the metal struts. Vale shook his head in clear negation. It was at times like this that Irene really wished she believed in prayer. Sudden death was easy to cope with, seeing as you had no time to ponder. But their impending crash and burn over the British Museum was leaving too much time for dread, with an inevitable fiery doom at the end. Every second seemed to stretch out into an eternal moment of panic. Then the Zeppelin settled on solid ground with a thump that threw Irene entirely onto Kai, knocked Mrs. Jenkins back in her seat, and made Vale drop his watch. Irene could vaguely hear screams and shouts outside. Hopefully anyone who was standing on the roof had had the sense to run away. With a muffled curse, Mrs. Jenkins started throwing switches. The hum of the motors began to slow as they shut down one by one. Suddenly the Zeppelin was absurdly quiet after all the earlier noise, with only the cabin's creaks and groans as an eerie backdrop.
"Thank you," Vale said. "Excellent piloting. I will be mentioning your conduct to your superior."
Mrs. Jenkins looked at him for a long moment, then picked up a rag and wiped her goggles with it.
"You'll find the exit to the right," she said flatly.
Kai released Irene and went to open the Zeppelin door. Irene saw it coming, but it was too fast for the language to stop it. The man in his mini-copter was hovering there, leveling his gun to shoot directly through the open door at the people in the cabin. At Kai, standing there with his back half-turned. She didn't have time to speak, but she did have time to move. She threw herself at Kai, and the two of them went sprawling on the floor together. Kai's mouth open in shock, as a whirring mass of silver flecks sliced through the air where he had been standing. The metal pieces sliced into the leather and wooden parts of the structure, chewing long gashes into them and ricocheted off the metal struts, leaving long silver scars against the dark oiled surfaces. A couple of them sliced along Irene's left arm, cutting through the cloth of her sleeve and drawing blood. Vale went down on one knee, snatched up Kai's pistol from where it had fallen, and fired. There was a long, dwindling scream and a distant crash. Irene looked down at Kai's face for a moment. He was looking up at her with that lost, puppy-like look again, as if she had somehow perfectly filled a hole in his personal universe. It was no doubt immensely flattering, but she didn't have time for that. She didn't have time to tell him that she trusted him or that he could trust her. She didn't have time for the immense feeling of gratitude that he was safe, or for anything except finding the book, stopping Alberic, and saving Bradamant. She had to finish the job, or all their efforts and the danger she'd put people in would be wasted. And she couldn't waste time indulging herself with personal feelings, even if she wanted to. "All right," she said briskly, pulling herself to her knees. "Good. Come on." Vale offered his hand and pulled her to her feet.
"Good reflexes, Miss Winters."
"Good shooting, Mr. Vale," she replied. "Thank you. Now let's find that book."
Chapter 20. There were several guards on the roof who would have liked to discuss their crash landing and the ensuing gunfire, but Vale simply strode past, and Irene and Kai marched along in his wake. Their commanding poise was spoiled a little by Kai's sidelong glances whenever he thought her back was turned. What did he expect from her?
"Through here," Vale said, pointing at a door in one of the smaller battlements circling the landing area.
Beyond that bulged the wide glass-curved roof of what must have been the reading room. Irene hadn't had time to admire it in this alternate, but she'd seen versions of it in other Londons, and she shuddered to think how close they came to landing on it. Though surely in a world of airships and personal helicopters, the curators must have taken some sort of precautions against things or people crashing through it from above. She really hoped so. She'd seen too many glass pyramids and domed roofs and huge chandeliers that were just accidents waiting to happen. Vale had a few quick words with the guard, who flung the door open and practically saluted them through. And then they were inside and out of the wind, and surrounded by comforting walls and walls of books. The rich, delightful smell of old paper, leather and ink permeated the place, washing away the pettier odours of blood and oil and smog. Irene felt a desperate surge of nostalgia for her library. Her life was more than just airship chases, cyborg alligator attacks, and hanging out with this alternate universe's nearest analogue to Sherlock Holmes. She was a librarian, and the deepest, most fundamental part of her life involved a love of books. Right now, she wanted nothing more than to shut the rest of the world out and have nothing to worry about except the next page of whatever she was reading.
"Which way is Aubrey's office?" Vale demanded.
Irene frowned, trying to remember the route.
"Third floor," she said. "Along from the south stairs, two rooms east, then one south, then east again. I think that most of the stuff along there was European history."
"This way," Vale said, leading the way down a gallery of drawings and prints. "Do you have a strategy?"
A couple of men looked up disapprovingly from their sketchbooks at the noise. Their faces were full of, "We are far too polite to say so, but really, you shouldn't be making any noise at all." Irene ignored them.
"Get the book," she said to Vale. "Secure this building against Alberich. My invoking the library won't keep Bradamant out, so she'll be safe once she gets here. I'll contact my central authority for direct assistance."
Vale raised an eyebrow.
"Aren't you going to tackle the fellow directly?"
Irene couldn't meet his gaze.
"I'd lose," she said.
"This language of yours," Vale started.
"I'd find it very hard to believe that other librarians haven't tried that against him already,"
Irene snapped before she could help herself.
"And confrontations with Alberich generally end with him sending parts of their internal organs back to the library, in neatly wrapped parcels. Someone said that they can tell it's a parcel from Alberich because he always folds the paper in the same way."
"Miss Winters, just because this fellow has reached the status of an urban legend, he's more than that,"
Kai said urgently. Their footsteps were loud in the stairwell.
"You were there last night, Vale. He sealed us in the carriage and put a block on it which even I couldn't undo."
There was an unconscious arrogance to his voice.
"And Aubrey, the librarian stationed here previously. He would have been more experienced than Irene. No insult, Irene, but..."
"Oh, don't worry,"
Irene said with a shrug, surreptitiously flexing her hands and trying to decide how fully recovered she was. For the moment, she was functional, if damaged.
"You're quite right. He wouldn't have been stationed in an alternate like this unless he was competent, and he was older and more experienced than I am."
"It's this floor," Vale said.
They came out of the stairwell into a room blazingly full of painted hieroglyphics, icons, and crosses with pointy end bits. Coptic, Irene decided. The light was artificial, presumably to spare the papyri from natural sunlight, but the colours leapt at them in a riot of gold, red and turquoise.
"Straight ahead, then left. And may I suggest that Mr. Aubrey had no warning that Alberich was coming? Presumably if he had done, then he could have secured himself and called for help from the library, just as you intend to do."
She didn't want to hear this. Casual strollers saw them coming and stepped out of the way. A couple of elderly ladies muttered something condemnatory about young people these days, as Irene strained to listen. Irene knew that this was displacement behaviour, as the last thing she wanted to do was listen to Vale talking about tackling Alberich. Playing chess matches against masters who were certain to defeat you was one thing. You learnt about chess, and you didn't die in the process. Getting into a fight with someone who would kill you, messily, failed to teach you anything useful. Unless reincarnation was genuine, and you did die in the process. It was hard enough to have to consider how important the book might be to this world. She could only think in small steps. If Alberic wanted the book, that meant it was important, possibly even vital to this world, and he mustn't have it. She was also trying to ignore Kai's sympathetic glances from behind Vale's back. Maybe there was a whole genre of literature written by dragons for dragons about how they sensibly stayed out of fights that they couldn't hope to win and flew away to do something very important somewhere else. Or maybe it was a bad idea to be distracting herself quite so thoroughly when they were almost at Aubrey's office. "We can't possibly know how Aubrey tried to handle Alberic," she finally said. "I believe the Aubrey I met was simply Alberic disguised. I never even met the real man. All I know is that I am not going to get into a fight which I can't win when there are alternatives." Vale nodded towards the exit. "Through that way, then straight on for the next 7 rooms, then turn left. Very well, I accept your judgment. Can you fetch help rapidly?" Irene was glad she could agree.
"From what I've heard, the main problem is that my superiors rarely know where Alberic is. If they can actually pinpoint him to this world, then they can take steps."
Vale cut in, and Irene realized it was a sign of his urgency that it actually interrupt.
"Miss Winters, a little logic, if you please. They already know he is in this world, as they warned you about him."
Something in Irene's stomach went cold. "Oh," she said. She hadn't thought that through.
Maybe they just suspected he was here, but had no actual proof."
Vale didn't say anything, but then again, he didn't need to, as Irene could feel the shallowness of her reasoning. Oh, it was fashionable among librarians of her age to impute dubious motives to their seniors. She'd heard the gossip.
"They'd use us as bait if they thought it was necessary. They edit the information they give us. They'd sacrifice us to get their hands on a text."
But that didn't mean they believed it. At the bottom of her heart, Irene had faith in her superiors. Genuine doubt was worse than fashionable adolescent doubt had ever been.
"And possibly I've been misinformed," she said, forcing firmness into her voice. "Can we at least assess the situation before we start assuming the worst?"
"As you wish," Vale said,
in tones stating, "I know perfectly well you aren't going to stop thinking about it now. But why wouldn't he be in his office, though we might wish him elsewhere?"
"The automaton attack at the museum," Kai suggested. "If that was him, and if he expected to find the book there, wouldn't he be on the spot to collect it?"
Vale rubbed his chin thoughtfully.
"That assumes that he was responsible for the automaton attack. And it would be rather overly controlling, wouldn't you say, to be there in person if he could command underlings?" "He did try to drown us in person," Kai answered. "Isn't that the sort of thing that people usually have their subordinates do?" "True, true."
Vale's frown lightened.
"If that should be so, let us by all means take advantage of it. And if not, well, I believe we may have the advantage in that he will not be expecting us. In either case, surprise and speed are our best option."
He looked around at the vast quantity of rather dull Romano-Celtic objects in the room, noting,
"And I do believe we are almost there." "We should clear the area," Kai said firmly.
"We can't without raising the alarm," Irene pointed out. "If Alberic were in the immediate area, he'd react to something like fire alarms going off, security guards clearing the area, or any sort of disturbance involving people running round shrieking. And people always ended up running round shrieking. It was a law of nature or something." She wondered if she could use the language to pre-warn them as to whether or not Alberic was in his office. Nothing came to mind.
"I think we'll just have to knock on the door and play innocent."
I believe it might work," Vale agreed. "He has no reason to believe you have penetrated his imposture. I will hold back and be ready with my gun."
Irene tried to think of how this plan might go wrong. Alberic couldn't have laid any sort of kill-anyone-who-touches-the-door spell on his office door, assuming that such a spell existed, something about which she had no clue whatsoever.
That would be too likely to slaughter innocent British Library staff and visiting children. So that was positive. What he might have done, what she would have done if she knew how, would be to set a ward against language use. Again, she had no idea whether or not it was possible, but she would assume for the moment that it was. So should she avoid the language for the moment? This bit of paranoid planning had helped her stroll through a number of Dark Ages exhibits without looking as panicked as she felt. Now, at last, their goal was through some last cases, then directly on the left. Irene took a deep breath. She gathered her determination, smiled blandly at Kai and Vale, then strolled forward. She tried to ignore the grandfather with a complaining brat to her right, and the students over by the archway ahead. Possible witnesses also included the woman squinting nearsightedly at a display card, who did look vaguely familiar. Maybe she'd seen her before when she came here last time. Oh dear, she was procrastinating again, wasn't she? Why couldn't this be the sort of story where she kicked the door down and burst in with a loaded gun? Probably because it was a heavy door, she was in long skirts, and she didn't have a loaded gun. Plastering her best look of sincere concern and gullibility on her face, she knocked on the door. No answer. She knocked again. A couple of the bystanders glanced across, then turned back to whatever they'd been doing. Still no answer.
"Cover me," Kai said in a low voice. He stepped forward, fishing a thin metal probe out of an inner pocket.
He tapped it against the doorknob as Irene shielded him from view. She glanced around, but nobody was paying them any attention, except for Vale, who was hanging back and ostensibly ignoring them. The tapping having drawn no visible reaction, Kai tried the handle. It didn't move, so he bent over and began picking the lock. Clearly his time as a juvenile criminal hadn't been a total fiction. Irene spread out her skirts and turned to watch the room, a smile pinned to her face.
"No, nothing going on here. Absolutely normal. My friend here likes to stare into locks and wiggle bits of metal round in them. He does it every day, and twice on Sundays."
A moment later, Kai was tapping her on the shoulder with a cool look of superiority. Irene gave him a nod and tried the door. It didn't explode.
"This is good. I'm already ahead of the game."
She turned the handle and walked into the room. A quick glance around showed that it looked just as they had left it the last time. No sign of anyone, nobody hiding under tables, nobody hiding behind the door. No Alberich. She breathed out a sigh of relief which she hadn't realized that she'd been holding, and stepped aside so that Kai could come in. Vale followed a few seconds later, closing the door behind him. Irene cast around, looking for anything that resembled an in-tray. Score, there was a blatantly obvious one on Aubrey's desk. She remembered it having been tidy when they first arrived, but it was now crowded with papers and oddments. She quickly sorted through it, and the packet with the Natural History Museum's address on the back, returned to sender, was the seventh item. It was an unobtrusive package in plain brown paper. "Paper knife," she said, extending one hand. Vale slapped a knife handle into her palm. It was elegant, made in ivory or whalebone, and had no doubt contributed to the extinction of at least one endangered species. It was also nice and sharp. Irene sliced through the twine and unfolded the wrappings. Inside was a book and an envelope. The book's title was Kinder- und Hausmärchen, Children's and Household Tales, she translated automatically, and breathed a sigh of relief. She flipped the book open to check the publication date, 1812. Better and better. Now what was the definite proof that Bradamant had mentioned? She turned to the index. There were 88 stories listed. The 87th was titled, in German, The Story of the Stone from the Tower of Babel. She breathed a sigh of relief. "It's the one," she said.
"Yes,"
Kai said exultantly, and slammed his palm down on the desk.
"We've got it."
"What does the letter say?" Vale asked. Irene put the book down again for the moment and opened the envelope. Thoughts of letter bombs came a few seconds too late. With a sigh, she shook the letter gently onto the desk. No bombs. Good.
Kai leaned across to read over her shoulder, then paused, tilting his head. A fraction of a second later, Irene heard it as well. Screams, screams, and a horrid sort of rustling with a nightmarish familiarity to it. She thrust the letter into her jacket. There would be time to read it later. The door slammed open with a heavy boom, and a woman ran in, looking round desperately. She had been amongst the browsers outside, but now looked panicked and in a state of disbelief.